KBOO News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
Tom Hartman is a progressive national and internationally syndicated talk show host. He is also a New York Times bestselling author of 24 books translated into multiple languages. Tom has a new book, The Hidden History of the Supreme Court and the Betrayal of America. Tom, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Althea and Annette. It's a pleasure being here with you.
Let's hear about this new book of yours. What can readers expect from it?
Well, there's kind of three big bites to it. One is looking at this thing called judicial review, which is where the Supreme Court can strike down laws, or in the case of things like corporate personhood or money as speech, actually write laws. These were not envisioned by the framers of the Constitution. And there was an enormous amount of debate about it early on. But anyhow, we need to have a serious conversation about that, which has been largely confined to the right wing after Brown v. Board and Roe v. Wade. But, you know, we're moving in the other direction. The second part of it is the fact that when the Constitution was written, the hot new things were the ability of average people, of course, which was defined as white men at the time, but nonetheless average people, to own private property and to have human rights. And that was a new thing in the 1700s. The environment was not even a consideration. Rivers seemed like you could just pour cities worth of waste into them forever and nothing ever mattered. We now have a crisis that could be civilization destroying, if not species destroying, for humans. And our Constitution isn't up to it, and we've got to address that. And then the third is, you know, what do we do about a Supreme Court that's run amok? And, you know, there's a whole bunch of different possible strategies to deal with that.
You know, there's a saying, history repeats itself. And there's a section in your book with a familiar name in it, Bill Barr.
Yeah.
As a figure in the Iran-Contra scandal. Now, given that he's pretty familiar because of the current political situation as well. What is Bill Barr's past relationship to scandal, especially when it comes to Republican presidents?
Well, in 1992, Bill Barr was George Herbert Walker Bush's attorney general. And for the previous couple of years, Lawrence Walsh had been appointed a special prosecutor to look into the whole Iran-Contra thing. Was it that Reagan had cut a deal, as the president of Iran was saying, President Bonnie Sauter had cut a deal with them to hold the hostages to make Jimmy Carter look bad and win the election? Or was it in response to a hostage taking in Lebanon, or, you know, whatever, you know, and shipping weapons? And then, of course, this went down to guns to Central America and cocaine coming back. Lawrence Walsh thought that he had already obtained three convictions, and he had two more that were queued up. Casper Weinberger, Ollie North, and Elliot Abrams were the ones who had been convicted, and who have all kind of returned, although Weinberger's passed away. But he thought that the thing that was going to nail Reagan and Bush, and that might end George Herbert Walker Bush up in federal prison, was that George Herbert Walker Bush had kept a diary of the original Reagan campaign. And he subpoenaed that. And Bush had been fighting that subpoena. And so Christmas Eve, 1992, Bush has lost the election to Bill Clinton. He's going to lose office in about 2-3 weeks. He's going to lose his immunities. He's going to lose all his power. And he goes to his attorney general, Bill Barr, and says, what do I do? And Bill Barr said, if you pardon everybody who has been charged and is being investigated right now, they will have no witnesses against you. They will have no case against you. They won't be able to enforce the subpoena for your diary, and it'll kill the whole thing. And if you have a New York Times subscription or you know somebody who does, look at the New York Times front page for Christmas Eve 1992, screaming, all caps, three line, you know, all the way across the entire page headline, Iran-Contra investigation shut down, prosecutors cries cover up. And that's exactly what it was. Bill Barr's advice to George Herbert Walker Bush was taken. It shut down the investigation. Bill Barr himself, by the way, was looking at the possibility of criminal indictment in this case. And so Bill Barr got out of it. George Herbert Walker Bush didn't go to jail, never even got, you know, nothing. I mean, he just succeeded. So he's the guy that when you're a Republican president and you need somebody to cover up the crimes that you've been committing, Bill Barr's the go-to guy.
Yeah, and look at what's happening today now with Trump.
Oh, yeah. He's even gone beyond, I think, what he did with the Bush administration. I think he's playing the role of kind of consigliere, as, mm-hmm. as you know, how they usually describe Rudy Giuliani. But I think Bill Barr is really the guy.
Now he's traveling the world and trying to find and investigate the investigators, he said.
That nasty FBI. I remember, you know, the FBI infiltrating SDS in 1968 when I was at Michigan State University. I mean, I've had my, I don't know what the word is, but concerns about the FBI. But generally speaking, the kind of investigation that they've been doing in this case doesn't seem to me like the kind of thing that they were doing against the Weather Underground and the SDS back in the day, or for that matter, Black Lives Matter or other, you know, contemporary movements. So recently,
the White House issued that formal letter to House Democrats saying that they're not going to cooperate with the impeachment inquiry. Is that going to work?
No. Okay. It's a scam. I mean, you know, they're doing a couple of things. Number one, they're trying to throw enough chaff into the wind that average people will get confused and figure, this is one of those complicated things. I'll let them serve. When it's really not very complicated. So you've got that, number one. Number two, they're saying, well, you're not giving us rights of due process as guaranteed by the Constitution and the Fifth through the Eighth Amendments. The right to face our accusers, the right to view testimony against us, things like that. Well, those are things that happen in trials. That's not what prosecutors and police use when they put together an indictment. And an impeachment in the House of Representatives is an indictment. It's not a trial. It simply means we are charging you with these crimes. Now we'll move over to the Senate, and you will have an opportunity to present a defense. You'll have an opportunity to see all the evidence against you. You'll be able to have an opportunity to cross-examine witnesses, to face your accusers. It's complete BS. They know it is. The fact that that letter was as long as it was and was so completely lacking in even one single
legal argument
had any validity.
Right.
And the closest they got was the Office of Legal Counsel suggesting that presidents can't be investigated they never even said investigated. They said they can't be prosecuted. Tells me how desperate and freaked out they are.
Let's talk for a moment about the Supreme Court and where they're at. I mean, there are some really high-profile cases coming up in this session that have to do with some of the ideals that progressives have been championing for years. For example, abortion rights on the line, transgender, gay, lesbian rights in the workplace. Those cases have been heard that this week. Any thoughts on where this court might be going based on what you know from history?
Well, the court has, by and large, throughout its history, been the instrument of property rights and great wealth and power. I mean, it's just kind of the bottom line. There was an anomalous period in the 40s and 50s because Franklin Roosevelt was elected president four times, and he replaced pretty much everybody on the court. And so the echo of that went all the way into the Warren Court. But by the time Nixon was putting Lewis Powell on the Supreme Court in 71 or 72, all bets were off. And the court has again become not just an instrument of wealth and power, but an instrument of the Republican Party and a shill for wealth and power. And that's one of the reasons that you have candidates. You know, Elizabeth Warren has suggested that she would consider increasing the size of the court. This has been done several times in our past. It's been done for purely political purposes. It was when Andrew Johnson, after Lincoln was assassinated, there were 10 people on the court, and Congress met. They have the power to regulate the court under the Constitution. They met, and they reduced the size of the court to 6 people. They didn't kick anybody off. They just said, if anybody dies, Andrew Johnson, you don't get to replace him, because he was a slave owner, he was a Southerner, he was, you know, favorable to the South, and Congress, both houses, were controlled by Northern Republicans. And then when Ulysses S. Grant came in after Andrew Johnson left, they took it back. They took it from 6 up to 9, which is where it is now. It was back to normal. FDR nearly did this in 37. A lot of the histories that you'll read online say that it was very unpopular and he made a big mistake. The fact of the matter is, though, if you read the histories that were written at the time or in the 40s or the 50s from people who were there, it was very popular. The court had knocked down the minimum wage. It had knocked down child labor laws. It had knocked down long-term unemployment. All these things is unconstitutional, and the American people were seriously angry. And the next thing up was Social Security. they were about to decide on that or to hear the arguments on that. And FDR, you know, threatened to simply expand the court and put his own people on it. But Frances Perkins, the first female Secretary of Labor, maybe the first Secretary of Labor, I think FDR might have created the Labor Department with the Wagner Act in 1935, the National Labor Relations Act. But anyway, Frances Perkins, by coincidence, knew the wife of Justice Owens, who was the head of what they called the Four Horsemen, this right-wing cabal on the court that was shooting everything down. She went to Owens's wife. Owens's wife went to Owens. Owens changed his vote. The next day, Roberts, who was the other head guy in the cabal, changed his vote. Suddenly, the court was voting with Franklin Roosevelt, and that was the end of that. FDR said, okay, you know, we don't need to pack the court. But I think that time may come again.
Mm-hmm. You're making an appearance tonight at Powell's. Want to
tell us
about that?
Yeah. I'm going to be giving a talk a little less than an hour, just kind of laying out those three areas that I talked with you about, and exactly what we can do about this if the court really truly goes nuts, as I fully expect it to do, particularly now that Brett Kavanaugh is on it.
Mm. Yeah. What kind of reforms do you recommend for, you know, this court that is not this liberal bastion, maybe, that progressive once imagined
it
to be?
Right. Well, first of all, the simple one is simply expanding the size of the court, which Congress can do with a simple majority vote in the House and Senate, although, you know, you may have to overcome a filibuster in the Senate, but that can be done. And if we had a Democratic president and a Democratic majority, particularly a supermajority in the Senate and a majority in the House, that could be done quite easily. And there's a bunch of different ways that could be done. It could be done so that you stagger people in and off and move them back to federal courts and things, or it could simply be done by saying we're going to go from 9 people to 15 people or 13 people or whatever. The other one is more interesting, and this was back during the Reagan administration. Reagan came to office, and the Republicans in general came to office in the 1980s, on the back of screaming about the 1954 Brown v. Board decision, which ended legal segregation in our schools, and the 1973 Roe v. Wade decision. And so Reagan hired, in the Justice Department, hired this young lawyer to come in and figure out how to overturn these two decisions without a constitutional amendment. How do we do this? The Constitution, Article 3, Section 2, says that Congress can create exceptions to what the Supreme Court can rule on. And so this lawyer, after he spent about a year and he dug all the way back to the founders and everything else and all his case law, he said, really all you have to do is write a law that says, you know, segregation's now legal, abortion's now illegal, and the Supreme Court may not review this law. Mm-hmm. And it's called court stripping or jurisdiction stripping. He wrote this 29-page memo up. It was pretty explosive. It got widely circulated in the Reagan White House. They ultimately decided they didn't have the political capital to pull it off. But that young lawyer, his name was John Roberts, and he's now the Chief Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court.
Oh, interesting.
So, yeah. Hi. So it could be one of these, you know, what goes around comes around kind of things.
Yeah.
You know, you Supreme Court, you think money is speech? You know, you think corporations are people? Well, we can write some laws about that. You know, so those are a couple of the possible ways that we could be dealing with an out of control Supreme Court.
Yeah. And Roberts is the one who, correct me if I'm wrong, but he's the one who's always saying that the court is not political. We don't have Clinton appointees. We don't have Obama or Trump appointees.
Right.
We have,
in our dreams.
Yeah.
right. You know, although he, you know, truth be told, I think that when he became Chief Justice, or probably within a year after he became Chief Justice, he started taking seriously his role in history. Mm-hmm. And at that point, he became far less of a partisan hack than Scalia and Thomas. I mean, Thomas is proud of the fact that he's a partisan hack, and his wife makes a couple hundred thousand bucks a year at the Heritage Foundation and all this kind of stuff, and he doesn't see that as a conflict. But I think that Roberts is more often than not trying to play it down the middle, at least the middle for the Supreme Court, which has always been to the right. Or at least, you know, on the side of wealth and power, as I mentioned. Mm-hmm. So,
is there anything else that our listeners should know that we haven't talked about yet?
Well, I think that the issue with the environment is a huge one. The Giuliani case is making its way through the Ninth Circuit. It started right here in Oregon, and it's probably going to end up before the Supreme Court, pretty much regardless of how the Ninth Circuit rules on it. And because the hot new things that existed when the Constitution was created were property rights and human rights, and environmental rights were unknown. And even the conversation about the rights of nature, you know, do rivers have rights, do trees have rights, is a very recent conversation. I mean, literally in my lifetime. I mean, it's a very recent conversation. So the court trying to put the environment into a human rights or property rights frame might be a squeeze. Although the Giuliana case, to a certain extent, is we are being deprived, all these young people who sued, saying we're being deprived of our rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, basically.
Because of climate change.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Yeah, right. And therefore, you know, the court has to say, yes, you must do something about this. You know, that's within the context of the current Constitution. But I think that coming up with a constitutional amendment or passing some legislation or doing something to suggest nature has rights, or at least nature has privileges that defend our rights, should be an important thing.
Well, one more time, the book is called The Hidden History of the Supreme Court and the Betrayal of America. Yep. And you're going to be talking about it tonight at 7:30 at Powell's.
That's right, and at Burnside. Yep. And I'm looking forward to it.
All right.
Thank you so much for being here, Tom.
Annette, Althea, thank you so much for having me on your program. It's been a real pleasure.
This has been KBOO News In Depth. Thank you so much for listening.